I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from a Dubai in the UAE that has been successfully defending itself militarily from a conflict it played no part in starting. At the end of last month, the US and Israel violated Article 2 of the United Nations Charter, the supreme international crime as defined at the Nuremberg trials. Thousands have been killed or wounded since Trump and Netanyahu launched their war of aggression against Iran, including over 180 young girls just at a primary school in the south of the country. The Israeli-American attack included an assassination in the month of Ramadan of Iranian leader Ali Khamenei along with his family. Iran's retaliation came in the form of drone and missile attacks on every country in West Asia that hosts U.S. military bases. The UAE responded by successfully using what appears to be the most sophisticated air defense system in the world, intercepting nearly every Iranian projectile. And the UAE maintained that UAE territory has not and will not be used in any military operation against Iran. All this while NATO nation, so-called mainstream media, spread misinformation to destroy the reputation of the city that hundreds of thousands of their citizens are emigrating to in droves, Dubai. Joining me from here in Dubai is the Director General of the Dubai Public Policy Research Center, a think tank that provides research, analysis and policy recommendations to support decision makers in the UAE and the broader region. Mohammed Baharoun was also the Deputy Director of Watani, the UAE's first initiative on national identity, and he's the former editor of the Gulf Defense magazine. Mohammed, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. You know, Gulf News here in Dubai had headlines like this in the past few days. UAE stands united and resolute, emergency air corridors activated to handle 48 flights per hour. Some might think it's propaganda, but actually, we don't want to be like an advert for Lockheed Martin. But were you surprised that the THAAD system was so effective?
First of all, Afshin, thank you very much for having me with you here. And I think I was definitely pleasantly surprised. However, the surprise does not go only because of the effectiveness of the air defense system. First of all, it was not only THAAD. It's a combination of a number of air defense systems, including one that is built here in the UAE. And we have recently heard the White House spokesperson specifically say that the attack that has happened on the U.S. consulate was defended with missiles produced here in the UAE. So that is something that has been in the making for years, and it just happened to happen that we use them today. We hope that we will never do that. What got me surprised really is how nonchalant it feels here. All of these attacks, the number of missiles and drones that has been targeted to the UAE, that is actually more than all of the missiles that went to all of the other countries Iran has targeted. Yet, we can drive outside, we go to the mall, we go to restaurants, we go to the mosque for prayer. So this is making us feel as if it is not happening. And I think this is something that we need to credit even first respondents on the way they have been conducting. Fires have been extinguished at a very high speed. People's life is being facilitated, eased up. Tourists who've been stranded here in Dubai have got, you know, their bill for their hotel's extension picked up by the UAE government. And those corridors now being opened slowly to allow those stranded to go back home. So that's it. I think that is in itself very impressive. The fact is not that we're only happy about it or proud about it. It's an amazement of how work of years and years of planning has now came out useful whenever it was needed.
Yeah, interesting. The UAE system didn't completely protect the consulate, it has to be said. But having said all of that, what have you thought about the international media's attempt, specifically, actually, it's in NATO countries, arguably, that have tried to besmirch the reputation of Dubai and not given a truthful view of what's happening in Dubai? For what reason? Why? Is it because the UAE didn't allow the Americans the use of the base?
Well, we could see malignant intent in there. However, I don't think this is in itself malignant as much as it is, as they call it, habit. We've seen this happening in 2008. We've seen it happening during 2020. And you must remember the time when, you know, the opening up of curfew in the UAE, resumption of life has been described as a, what was the term?
During COVID.
Like a mega spreader. Yes, during COVID. So it's not new. We're used to it. It has been.
But why?
And I don't think it's NATO.
But why?
I don't think it's NATO. I think it's just a natural thing for a success story always to be targeted. And it's absolutely, unfortunately, natural in this time. But again, the most important thing is that it is not affecting us.
On Saturday's show, we interviewed James Fennell. He's a captain who is the Director of Intelligence and Information Operations at the U.S. Pacific Fleet. And when I said to him, look, the UAE, like Saudi Arabia, they said that the United States' bases could not be used on the soil of the United Arab Emirates, for instance. He seemed unaware of that. He said, well, we kind of did use it, which I thought was quite surprising. Do you think there is a residual animosity because the UAE did not allow the bases here to be used for the attack on Iran?
Well, I don't think it's only the UAE. I mean, this is a position that all of the GCC countries have, most of the GCC countries have maintained. I mean, there is the exception of both Qatar and Bahrain, who have bases that belong to the U.S. So it's pretty much U.S. property, and they don't have control over that. But the majority of Kuwait, UAE, Oman, Bahrain, not Bahrain, sorry, Saudi Arabia, they've all maintained the same thing, that they would not allow their crown to be used. I mean, not even GCC. I mean, you've heard Jordan say the same thing. It is a position where this is not our war. And I think that is the underlying message from everyone. We did not choose this war, and we are not part of it.
Do you think there was an element of the envy going on as regards to why then it was Dubai that bore the brunt of the retaliation for the U.S. and Israeli strikes? This is a Dubai and UAE, which is thought to be the equivalent in the Second World War, say, of Switzerland. Switzerland now a de facto NATO country, not neutral. Why on earth was Dubai targeted? And did that surprise you as well, by an Iran who is considered a brotherly BRICS nation of the UAE's?
It was a big question for most analysts, frankly, because it was totally difficult to imagine why a country that has kept very good relationship with Iran despite the occupation of its islands, a country that, you know, pretty much opposed the war, a country that tried and mediate would be a target, especially that this country is not part of the war and continuously said that we do not want to be part of that war. And I think my own assessment is that UAE, Dubai, maybe was supposed to be the first domino in a domino effect. That was the easiest, most glass-filled, you know, city, and the most polished, so smudging it would, you know, start a domino effect where all of the GCC countries would use their own power, diplomatic, whatever, to stop the war. And that didn't happen. So the insistence was that we need that first domino to fall down. And it didn't until now.
It was pretty poor intelligence then that Iran had on that. They didn't understand the air defenses of Dubai and the UAE then.
Look, anyone who looks at the UAE from outside, or even Dubai, they would see shiny cities and you know, towers and push people and nice luxury cars. That's the image. It doesn't suggest that this is, you know, a country that has resolve, that has, you know, ability to defend itself. And I think it is natural if you just look at the appearances of people and think that this is their quality. But the UAE has been in a number of you know, battles around the world. And I think more than the battle experience, I think it's the planning. And I think it's a crucial element that allowed the UAE to regain its position very fast. It was the first to rebound after 2008. It was the first to rebound after 2020 and during COVID. People forget that there was an extremely successful expo in the UAE during the most worrisome times in the world. So that is the type of resolve people in the UAE have and its leadership have.
Yeah, I interviewed Sheikh Mohammed a number of times. I think 25 years ago, he told me the island dispute itself was kind of manufactured to a certain extent, it appeared, by powers that want conflict between Iran and the UAE. But then why is, and it should be noted that Sheikh Mohammed was defense minister of the UAE when he was crown prince. But why is it the UAE was speaking through Vladimir Putin with the Iranians in the early days of the war? What's your understanding of how negotiations are occurring to stop the onslaught and the military onslaught on the UAE, which, as we both know, is nothing to do with starting this war, apart from having a US base?
Well, again, I think Iran possibly finds itself at a disadvantage from a military point of view. The only way that it can pressure the US is by, you know, expanding the price of war or the cost of war, and by attacking people who are nearer to them. I mean, remember that during the beginning of the campaign, the focus was on the longer range missiles, the type of Shahed drones that can be produced in a workshop if you want, much cheaper. Shorter range does not go all the way to Israel, but it can affect countries nearer to Iran. And I think for them, that was a way of increasing the price of war on the U.S., but also on everyone. I think, right, what we see, you know, or what they have seen recently is targeting the energy infrastructure in the region. Again, that is targeted to raise the price of oil, take the battle into the gas stations and into the U.S. We've seen this also with gas prices, which are also going to affect people in Europe. And in their thinking, maybe that is going to make people in Europe, you know, sort of either pressure or, you know, campaign for a diplomatic resolution of the war. Now, the strange thing is that the Iranians come out and say, we do not want a diplomatic resolution of the... but again, that's part of the bravado that we see after the decapitation of Khamenei.
Mohammed Bahroun, I'll stop you there. More from the Director General of the Dubai Public Policy Research Center after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Director General of the Dubai Public Policy Research Center, Mohammed Bahroun. Mohammed, you were talking about why Dubai might want to be targeted as far as strategic concerns are existing in Tehran. Of course, one question that does hover amongst this entire war is, why did GCC countries trust the United States in the first place? I mean, the whole world was warned beforehand. The Armada had been sent to the Gulf region. Trump continually signaled it was going to happen. Do you not think it was clear that the United States will not allow countries to be neutral in this region, yet these countries desire to be neutral?
The war decision is, again, not a decision that the countries of the GCC have taken. We have seen the buildup. We have very actively talked to the Iranians, supported an early solution for this through a deal. We knew what was going to happen, but that doesn't mean that you're part of it. Now, the trust of the U.S., I don't think it's just a trust because of the war. There has been a relationship with the U.S. that, you know, went on for over 50 years now in the region. This is not new. It has its own ups and downs. We still remember the previous administration and its position towards Saudi Arabia, for instance. And we've also remember the previous administration with President Obama and the concept of free riders of the U.S. security umbrella. So these things are things that we know, part of a relationship that was ongoing, that has its own challenges. I don't think it's complete trust, but also we have also been exercising our agency in this. And you could see that agency manifest itself, for instance, in the Gaza peace plan, which was not the original Trump plan, but it was something that has been formulated with a lot of input from the region. So I don't think that we are today in the same position we used to be 50 years ago when it comes to the U.S. partnership. And I think you might have heard this word partnership more often than alliances in the region, because that is how we're looking at it. There is an equal partnership. Now, whether it's the war in Gaza that we did not support, but we got burned by it as well, the war in Iran, the 12 days war and this current war, we did not opt for, but we will burn by as well. These are decisions by the U.S., by Israel, not our decisions. However, I think our role right now is not to say that, look, I am going to be part of this war or not going to be part of this war. I think our role right now is to look at the future and see how can we come out of this. And in the UAE fashion, I think we also, in the midst of big calamities, we look for opportunities. What are the new opportunities now that could happen? And I think that any solution that could come out of this, if it doesn't involve real benefit to Iran and Iranian people, it will not, succeed. This cannot be, a defeat, a surrender, a humiliation of Iranian, because as you mentioned, 100 million people in Iran, those cannot be ignored. They have their own agency. They have their own aspirations. What we need is to have our aspirations and their aspirations aligned.
And just on Gaza, because you mentioned it, it didn't make any difference that the UAE joined the Abraham Accords and therefore would be a target for Iran, because Saudi Arabia arguably was more voluble in the sense that it called it out as a genocide. So people can't say it was because the UAE joined the Abraham Accord that it was targeted, because every GCC country was targeted.
Well, if it was about the Abraham Accord, then most of the attacks would be on Israel, not on anyone else. Before the UAE joined the Abrahamic Accords, Jordan had a peace plan. Before Jordan had a peace plan, Egypt has a peace plan. None of them are targeted. I think this is a fallacy, or maybe, as you said before, this is part of the misinformation, the framing of things, but I don't think this is the reality.
And it's clear that the enemies of the GCC would seek to divide the UAE from Saudi Arabia. That's been going on in the weeks ahead of this war. Clear that thousands have been killed, of course, in so many countries, and of course, especially Iran. One side effect is definitely the unification of interests between Saudi Arabia and the UAE.
Well, the unification of interest has always been there. But again, these are national interests, and national interest among all countries can, intersect or diverge. And I don't think this is the big problem of diverging national interest or intersecting national interest. I think the main issue right now is that this is going to be about the whole security of the region. And the security of the region is meshed into each other. We cannot be secure if Saudi Arabia is not. Saudi Arabia cannot be secure if we are not. Oman cannot be secure if Bahrain is not, and vice versa. So again, there has been issues between Bahrain and Qatar that went all the way to the Court of Justice. But today they are attacked, both of them, by the same country. So again, I can't say that everything that is happening is because of an external power that is trying to either bring us together or take us apart. There are things that we do.
Israel, we're talking about, yeah.
Well, there is an interest, of course, if you would want to believe that the only, let's say, dynamics in the region is the dynamics of power. Dynamics of power means that either you get stronger or others get weaker. So again, but frankly, Saudi Arabia was very close to a deal or an understanding with Israel. What made it fall around was not only the Gaza attack, but also the fact that Israel does not want to acknowledge or accept any future for the Palestinians and as a state. That was the point. We in the UAE, through the Abrahamic Accords, were trying to create a reality where this is not a threat to the Israelis. That's their maintain. They maintained this for a long time, that a Palestinian state is a threat to Israel. And our view was that, look, in an integrated situation where all of the countries don't fight each other over religion, and we are capable of being part of a wider network, then that will change the dynamics. Unfortunately, it didn't. We were close to that. The Gaza attack sort of, dismantled this and brought Israel back to their muscle memory of fighting against all of the Arabs. And I think that's where we're seeing this new approach of greater Israel, where,
We all heard Mike Huckabee. We all are wanting to occupy parts of Saudi Arabia. But then, given that Qatar has been talking to Iran, UAE no doubt back channels with Iran and Saudi Arabia, what role has BRICS in this war? I mean, could there not be some sort of BRICS summit? Or is this a failure of BRICS? Are those who are against multipolarity and non-alignment going to be saying, look, the GCC countries failed, and BRICS countries in this region with Iran, they failed at ensuring security? Or will this be the spur for that multipolarity?
Well, frankly, Afshin, this is one of my personal disappointments, because I thought that this was the time when BRICS can show that it can have a role in stabilizing this. I fully understand that BRICS started and wants to stay as an economic forum rather than, a political UN or, a military alliance. But diplomacy is very important to maintain those economic interests. And we haven't seen a BRICS country come together and say, yes, this is happening, but now we have a role in trying and stop it. And I think, I'm not saying that it will not happen. I'm just saying that I thought it will happen sooner. And I remember the time when countries have not taken the diplomatic initiative when the war between Russia and Ukraine started. And we've lost a lot of valuable time during that, because people wanted to take a certain moral stand on this, rather than say, regardless of where we stand morally on this, we will have to start engaging on stopping the war through diplomacy. And that's why we've seen countries like UAE, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, doing what UN was supposed to do, for instance. So I'm afraid that BRICS is finding itself in the same position UN found itself during the war between Ukraine and Russia.
Well, it's clear what Trump thinks of BRICS. Simultaneously, though, if a dying empire, as the United States sees itself, let alone others, if BRICS does become a greater part of the world, what if the United States hit the Bushehr reactor? We both live in Dubai. There are some estimates that radiation within a couple of days would hit Dubai. Do you think the United States would go as far as hit the Bushehr nuclear reactor in Iran, where there are Russian personnel?
Frankly, it's not only us who live in the region. Americans live in Bahrain and they live in Qatar.
So they're evacuating them.
Well, for now, they're evacuating civilians, but there are a lot of interest that will not go away. So I doubt that this is something that the U.S. will intend. If you've looked at the U.S. strike on Iran, what was called the Midnight Hammer operation, that was a diplomatic operation. It actually ended the war. It didn't start it. So I don't think that the U.S. is void of strategy. I don't think this is an accurate description. It's just that one, we don't see that strategy today. And frankly, a lot of the Americans I've been talking to share that they don't see a concrete strategy for this war either. I mean, the military might is there. The political outcome or strategic outcome is not clear. Can the military might deliver a strategic outcome, or will it only deliver military outcome? Military outcome is clear. I mean, there is open skies now for U.S. and Israeli airplanes. They can bomb whatever they want. But is there a strategic outcome? Is it going to make Iran a better place? Is it going to make the region a better place? This is the big question for us.
Yeah, clearly the Americans you're talking to aren't the ones in the Trump inner circle, arguably. But what about negotiations? I mean, do you think there is any way a country would ever negotiate with the United States now? And does the negotiating have to be done really between GCC states and Iran, given that the United States is now infamous for negotiating mass killing amidst negotiating?
Well, there is diplomatic negotiation, and then there's economic negotiation described as the deal, which is transactional. I think transactional negotiations right now are possible. You know, more of a peace deal and for the future. I don't see elements that would support it right now. However, a transactional negotiation that leads to, opening up space for those negotiations is what we need to focus on right now. So we're not going to have a big peace deal between U.S. and Iran today, but we need to create the space for those discussions that is based on what is the future of Iran.
Mohammed Bahroun, thank you.
Thank you, Afshin, for having me here, and please keep safe.
That's it for the show. Our thoughts are with all those affected by the West Asia war. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.